Welcome to Rice Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr. Among other books, I'm also the author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights and publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. For books on home and hearth, please visit my website at starpublications.com. That's S-T-A-R-R, publications with an S.com. The Homeowner's Defense Kit Trilogy, which includes my book, is the first link on the left, and we also offer homeowners health and empowerment counseling. Our Rights Radio topic today, Florida legislation passed in 2008 further protects condo owner association rights. Our very special guest spearheaded this legislation and is at the forefront of homeowner rights reform in Florida. Florida State Representative Julio Rabina was the first Hispanic elected commissioner of the city of South Miami and the first Hispanic mayor of the city of South Miami. Under his stewardship, the city of South Miami was named one of the top 10 cities in the United States in 2001 and received the honor of being named All-American City by the National Civic League among approximately 600 cities and counties that competed. He is currently serving as chair of Urban and Local Affairs and as the chairman of the Select Committee on Condominium and Homeowners Association Governance. Welcome, Julio.
Thank you, Dr. Starr, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you and those that are listening in today.
I'm so pleased to have you on our show.
Well, believe me, I really am thankful, and I'm thrilled because I've known you and your work and what you've done for a number of years, and for me, it's really a pleasure because you know that we do a lot of things in Tallahassee at the Capitol, and people never have an opportunity to find out what we did, whether it's positive or negative, but here's a great opportunity to share with your listeners the good things that the state of Florida did for those that live in condominium associations.
Absolutely, and let's begin by going right to the heart of the matter. A new legislation was passed, and you spearheaded it. Can you give us the name of the legislation, the number, and what it was all about?
Well, absolutely, and well, I guess what we'll do is we'll talk about the condo reform legislation. We're calling this the Condo Act of 2008. The House bill, for those who track it and want to go online, you can always go to www.myfloridahouse.gov, G-O-V, and look in there, and you can look for House Bill 995. House Bill 995. That's the bill that I passed called the Condo Act of 2008, and it was really a reform. We'll talk a little bit about that, then we'll talk about the bill that was vetoed just a couple of days ago that has to do with homeowner associations, and then, of course, we'll try to get some input on what we're going to do, because I'm going to try to tackle the homeowner association problems in the next coming session. But Dr. Starr, going right to the meat of what we did in this legislation this year, the number one thing that was done was what we would consider to be finally the real regulation of community association managers, what you call CAMs, and how they're finally really going to be regulated. I mean, it's going to create a threshold where if you are a CAM and you've had a shady background, you're probably going to find yourself in a position where you will end up losing your license. But real quickly, when it comes to CAMs, what this law will do is the following. It will provide for the license application fee and authorization to do business in Florida. It will deal with the way that they are regulated, how you can file complaints to get them against these CAMs, prohibits licensures of persons that found to be doing CAM functions that really don't have licenses. It's going to provide for timely investigations and complaints against these CAMs, provides all types of other specific grounds for disciplinary action, and finally, what I like to call accountability. Because this group basically, if you ever had a CAM that you were not happy with or was doing things in, let's say, a way that wasn't the most ethical way of doing things, now you'll have a way to go after these individuals. The other thing that we're going to be doing is, and I think the best thing for me to do is just go line by line and explain it real briefly. Remember, this was over 100 pages of legislation. 2 hours to explain the bill, so I'm going to try to be as brief as I can. Here's some of the new things. If you live in a condo association, it will start the following. There is a liability for monetary damages, meaning that if an officer or director or an agent acts in good faith and is liable for monetary damage under certain circumstances, criminal law or personal benefits or an act of omission in bad faith with malicious intent will now be penalized. I mean, there are issues where people sometimes act incorrectly. In Miami-Dade County, we like to call it fraud, and we are creating a fraud program to go after these people. But on the same side, if an officer or an agent acts in good faith, of course, there will not be charges brought against them if it's not something of criminal nature. I mean, that will be a way that we'll regulate them through the state of Florida. Let me go into the big provisions. From now on, starting October 1st, which is when all of these parts of the law will be enacted, there's going to be a civil penalty for destroying records. Did you hear me on that one?
I heard you loud.
That's a big one. It's going to create a provision that subjects to civil penalties any person who knowingly or intentionally destroys or fails to create or maintain accounting records for associations. Another one, the accessibility of records. It's going to require that associations make requested documents available within certain miles of the condominium property or within the county, and, of course, that they must provide these documents within 5 working days. Another thing, prevention of identity theft. One of the things we did in there is no documents now will have social security numbers, driver's license number, credit card numbers, or any other personal identification on the document so that it won't lead to identity theft. Disclosure and information for reserves. What that's going to do, it's going to require the division to create rules that include the disclosure of at least a summary of what the reserves have in it, including information as to whether the reserves are being funded at the level that's sufficient to prevent the need of something that all condo homeowners hate, is to, again, prevent the need for constant special assessments, and if not, the amounts necessary to bring the reserves up to the level necessary to avoid these special interests. Audit financial reporting. It's going to provide that the audits shall be paid for by a developer if done prior to turnover or control the association. And the association, of course, here's a key provision. No longer will associations be able to waive the financial reporting requirements of this section for more than 3 consecutive years. Let me dwell on that. One of the biggest problems that we hear around the state of Florida is there's no accountability. What did they do with my money? What did they do with my maintenance fees? What did they do with the money for the special assessment? Well, you know that by law, you have to have a financial report done every year. But the law at the same time used to state that with the approval of the majority of the board, they could waive that financial reporting requirement. Well, now what we're doing is we're saying that you can waive it 2 years. You can't go longer than 2 years. By the third year, you have to do the audit. And let me tell you why that's important. That's going to bring accountability. People are going to know what's being done with their money. And one of the ones, one of the groups had suggested that we change the law and now allow them to waive it year after year was none other than the state attorney's offices and the groups, what we call the economic crime units of different police departments, that investigate this, because without those financial reporting documents, there was really not much to base things on. And then if they were to get into an investigation, it would last for a very, very long time in order to get something done within the investigation. Another provision, votes for ghost units. What this does is that votes allocated to units owned by the association may not be cast by proxy ballot or otherwise for any purposes, eliminating ghost votes. And quickly, an example of what it is here that I'm talking about. On Miami Beach here, we have condominiums that when the developer built them and turned them over to the first board of directors, believe it or not, in order to always have control of the board, the developer kept a lot of the common elements, meaning hallway closets, broom closets, meeting rooms, and those actual bylaws and covenances were set up where the those particular, what I consider to be common elements, constituted a vote. And with those control of the votes, they would then cast those votes on behalf of, let's say, of an existing board, and there was never really any turnover, so they were able to control a board of directors.
Are you saying that a developer could set up a closet as a vote?
I will tell you, and I'm embarrassed to tell you, that currently exists in Miami Beach and in other condominiums around the state of Florida. Many, many years ago, I don't know, I guess in the wisdom of the legislative body, they allowed common elements to constitute a vote. They call it a ghost vote. So, yes, to answer your question, we have a condo in Miami Beach that the developer, when, of course, is now turned over that particular power to the current board, the board will get a vote for a broom closet. They get a vote for the meeting room. I mean, these are the kind of things that we experience, you know, with condo law, that when this was brought to our attention, of course, we went right into action and started to undo this. By the way, Dr. Starr, if I may, just want to let everyone know before I continue that all of these changes were not my ideas. These changes were not made by a bunch of legislators that decided that this is the right thing to do. I want you to know that what we did is we went around the state of Florida and got input from people around the state on not only what the problems were, but what they thought we needed to do to correct them. So what I'm stating here is fact. These are the nightmares. These are the problems that people have had to deal with for years. And what we did is simply what government should have done. We listened. We took their ideas for resolving these problems that they were having them. We submitted them, and thank God it's now law. So that's how these came about.
That's wonderful.
Another thing, adding an item to the agenda. What this does, it creates an avenue for unit owners to place an item on a board meeting agenda or to call for a special meeting of the board through a petition of 20% of the owners within 60 days. So basically what we tried to do is give people a voice. I know that there's been associations out there that don't want to let people put things on the agenda that are not on the board, didn't want to notice certain meetings, and I think what this does, it gives people a voice.
Did you say 30%?
20%.
20%.
20% of the owners.
That's a revolution.
It is. Actually, it's called giving people a voice. I mean, you should have had a voice. I mean, and by the way, when you hear some of the things that we're doing, you're probably going to say to yourself, my God, that was common sense. Well, common sense a lot of times has not prevailed in association living, and for some reason the boards didn't want to give these unit owners a chance to place items on the agenda. Mind-boggling as it is, here we are mandating a way for them to put something on the agenda. Another thing, location meeting, eligibility to serve on board. Here's something else we did. We created a provision that permits all board members to stand for re-election each year, but staggered terms for no more than 2 years if it's approved. So technically what we tried to do is say that nobody will stay and hold a position for no more than 2 years. In the past, there's been boards where people have been elected for up to a period of 3 years, and I think what we're trying to do is the same thing you do to your elected body. Every so often, it's mandatory that you have to have an election. If you're not happy with them, you'll have a chance to remove them. Here's another thing. Prohibits co-owners of a unit from serving on a board at the same time in an association with greater than 10 units. Let me be clear with that. That stops these conflicts of interest. We have units where family members that live in the same unit both serve at the same time on the board. We have found that to be, at the minimum, probably one of those that we like to say in slang terms, it just didn't pass the smell test. So we have now opted for that. Here's another one.
Can I just interrupt for
absolutely.
A moment to ask you, mm-hmm. They must stand for 2 years, or they can stand for 2 years. What if they want to run for the second 2 years or the third 2 years? That's the problem of consecutive terms. People are never actually forced out of office because they have too many supporters with quotes around that.
Here's how it states. All board members can stand for re-election each year, but it will allow if they currently have what they call staggered terms, but that will go for no more than 2 years.
All right.
So what that does is we are allowing elections to take place But the case, Dr. Starr, in that one was that a lot of condominiums, believe it or not, in some cases had longer terms than that. And that was that's where we found that, as people like to call them, the condo commandos would set up shop and they were impossible to remove.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do is exactly that, is to try to keep it to no more than 2 years. Most of the people will probably change their bylaws and opt for a yearly election, which is our goal. And that is one of the provisions that we'll talk later about that we like to present for HOAs and possibly a reconsideration for condominiums. Another provision on here is an owner who has been suspended or removed by the division under this chapter will not be eligible for board membership. And you'll see what that is in a minute. That means if you have board members that are not paying their dues or are not up to date in whatever responsibilities, they can now be removed by the division. It also prohibits owners that are, delinquents, that are delinquent in the payment of any fees or assessments to serve on a board. Another very important provision prohibits anyone convicted of a felony anywhere from serving on a board of directors. Now, however, you know that a lot of felons have their rights restored through a clemency process. So if that's taken place, a felon that has had his clemency status given to him, he has to wait 5 years till after the restoration of his rights.
Okay.
Certification forms for candidates. What this is short of mandating mandatory training, here's what we did. And the reason that before I explain this to you, we did this is because what we have found is that we love our volunteers, we love all those people out there, and we thank you for volunteering. But a lot of times people get elected to the board of directors and don't have a clue what their responsibility is. They don't take courses, they don't try to understand what it is and what their responsibilities are. They don't even know what their bylaws are. They don't know what the Florida statutes are. And what we did, and this is the first step, is we created the following, what we call a certification form for candidate. What it does is, the 60-day election notice shall include a certification form provided by the division attesting that the candidates for board members have read and understand to the best of their ability the governing documents of the association and the provisions of Chapter 718 and any applicable rules within the association. Now, this form has to be signed and sent to the association with no less than 35 days, you know, after the election has taken place if you've been elected to office. So it's important. We basically want educated, knowledgeable people on the board. Why is that important? One of the problems that we see a lot of times, especially in the communities where you have a lot of elderly board members, you know, they get involved. Somebody tells them, come on, get on the board. Let's get you on this board. You get elected. They really don't know any of these things that are important. And at times you got maybe one board member that is somewhat educated in what the responsibilities are, and he's basically guiding the train. Or you have a property management company that comes in, and they're relying on the property management company for advice, or even a CAM. They could be relying on a CAM. We want this board to be like every other board with people that understand what the law state, what their dot state, and what their responsibilities are. That
Again,
was the reason behind that.
Comment here, it's a form that they must sign before they run?
Well, the form is distributed to them before they run.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that, of course, will be kept and accounted for will be only for those that got elected. So if you got elected, you have to have had it turned in. They give you 35 days after you've been elected to be able to turn in the form and prove that you have already mastered these particular responsibilities.
And what if you didn't?
If you didn't, then there's a provision that the division can remove you from the board of directors. They're doing you a service by doing so. What will happen is those certification, or as we call them, these forms, need to be filled out, and a copy of it, of this certification form, must be submitted to Tallahassee, the division. So if anybody ever questions, well, did they go through this certification? Did they do this form? And there's not one available, the division will have the opportunity to remove the individual from the board.
How does the division do that? Because, of course, as we saw over the years, the division will write letters, and often the board will ignore them. So what will the division have?
Well, here's what we've done. Let me jump to that as I continue with the rest of these issues here that we passed in legislative form. We have also, through our legislation, we have basically revamped DBPR. That's the Division of Business and Professional Regulations, the Condo and Land Sales Division. It's being completely revised, reformed. What we have done is we are now making them more of a specialized unit. They're going to take on these types of cases. They're going to come out to the community. What my vision was, and I think this is where we're finally at, some of the smaller responsibilities that the division had. So to answer your question, I know that people haven't had much trust or faith in the division because they had a history of being a division of the regulatory arm of the state of Florida, that when you complained, what did they do? They sent you a letter stating, don't do that anymore, you're in violation of this statute. And, of course, they would also threaten you, but rarely would they fine the board. And that was basically what I would used to consider a government bureaucracy paper pushing, you know, out of Tallahassee. Those things are changing. The new division, in cases like this, if there's multiple complaints, they're actually going to assign somebody to the case, and they will come out to the association and will do their investigation on site, will request this documentation. So there's been a complete revamping of DBPR and the condo division. Some of the smaller responsibilities, as we like to call it, the fat dog syndrome, where somebody was complaining about a neighbor's dog, which is basically a rules violation within the docks of the association. Those smaller issues that DPPR used to get bogged down with, which was 40% of their problems, have now been assigned to the Office of the Ombudsman. So now the Ombudsman will take on the smaller complaints, which are normally not anything of an emergency situation, not something that has to do with fraud or transparency, and then the larger cases will be investigated by DBPR hands-on. The goal was to get them out of the office, have them come out. What we were trying to model here is similar to what we modeled many, many years ago when people complained about Medicaid fraud and problems, and you used to call a phone number and they tried to tell you what you could do. But nowadays, people actually come out and get involved and do an on-site investigation. That's what we're looking at in changes to DBPR. Continuing, trying to be brief, I'm going to try to get to the key ones here. We talked about board member delinquency. Removal of a director charged with theft or embezzlement. Any director or officer charged with a felony theft or embezzlement offense, including association funds, shall be removed from office, creating a vacancy in the office to be filled accordingly to law. While such criminal charges are pending, he or she may not be appointed or elected to any position of a board of directors. Receiverships, as you know, that those are the worst-case scenarios when you live in a condo. Now, there'll be no surprises. If there is an intent to apply for receivership, a 30-day notice must be provided by the unit owner by the complainant to every unit owner of the association by certified mail or personal delivery. And let me tell you the importance of that. A lot of times people complain that they ended up in receivership because they never knew that they were in such a financial situation. Now there has to be, as I said, certified mail to each unit owner to alert them that there is a problem. Here's another very important one. Now we're going to require that condominium buildings be inspected and to the board to provide a report under a seal of an architect or an engineer authorized to practice in the state, attesting that the building has gotten the required maintenance, useful life, and replacement costs of all common elements. Let me tell you the importance of that. Coastal areas in Florida. Dr. Starr, people bought a lot of these condos many, many years ago, and when you live next to the water, it's a beautiful thing, but it comes with a lot of maintenance headaches. I mean, there's times where, as you know, buildings in the state of Florida are required every 40 years to go through a structural inspection. That actually will tell you how your investment is standing, what's the integrity of the building. Where here in South Florida, down especially on Miami Beach, We've had a number of buildings where people were basically told by the city or the county that they had to get out. They were closing it down. They were condemning it because it was an unsafe structure, because the building never received the proper maintenance. The rebar, the steel within the building is weakened because of the salt being so close to the water. And now all of a sudden you got people that own units that have been basically moved out against their will, having to pay for their, still the maintenance fees, their insurance, and a mortgage, but can't use the facility because of this. So what we're trying to do, this is about consumer protection. Like I said, that this building has to be inspected, and that every unit owner will know what the integrity is of the building that they currently live in. Here's another very interesting one. This one, for a lot of people, it really meant a lot. Now an association may not refuse the request of a unit owner for the reasonable accommodation of an attachment of a religious object on the mantle or the frame of the door. You remember that one?
I remember that case.
That was something where a mezuzah, a woman tried to put a mezuzah up, and she was basically fined and told she couldn't do it. Well, that's over. Now the no board will have the right to deny it. They'll have a right to be able to tell you the size, but not to deny you the attachment of this religious object. Lien intent notice by certified mail. Very important, especially with all the liens and the foreclosure proceedings that we're currently facing. Now it's going to require a 30-day notice of intent to lien a property, and it has to be delivered to the owner by certified mail return receipt and by first-class U.S. mail to owners at his or her last known address as reflected in the records of the association. A lot of problems with this. It's already pretty bad, the number of people that are finding themselves in a hardship situation, but the worst case was that you didn't even know when all of a sudden there was a lien filed against your unit. Now notification will definitely have to be clear and concise.
Can we come back to that?
Absolutely.
One? I think it's so important. I'd like to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
You can interrupt me at any time. If you've got questions or you want a little more detail, feel free to do so. Again, liens. 30-day notice of intent to file a lien to be delivered to the owner by certified mail, return receipt requested.
But can they stop the process? Can they stop the clock in any way? Because so many of these liens are terribly unfair. I'm dealing with a case now in another state where the board gave the members only 4 months to pay off a multimillion-dollar assessment, and when the majority could not do that in 4 months because they were quite senior and on fixed incomes and couldn't get loans or couldn't get them that quickly, they immediately put liens on all the homes.
Well, let me be very honest with you. That was a subject of discussion during the bill about putting a cap on how much money should be owed in order to put a lien on a property, and that failed miserably. And I think the discussion there was along the lines that, well, if you allow that to happen, then everybody will push it to the limits on how much they can go and not pay before they're liened. And you got to understand on that one, Dr. Starr, that the situation there was simply that everybody pays into what I call the pot of money, the money that the account that they use to budget and to do the maintenance of the building. What's happening in this case is, in some cases, liens are very necessary, and I know that probably is not something that sits well with those that are listening, but you got to understand that if somebody refuses to pay, or in your case it's different, yours was a hardship, but there are times here where people get upset with the board and said, you know what, I'm not paying my maintenance fee this month, or I'm not going to pay that special assessment. You understand that then the rest of the unit owners have to absorb the cost differential or the difference in money that's needed, because there's a budget needed to do certain work or maintain a building, and then that hardship is passed on to the rest of the unit owners. My colleagues in Tallahassee thought that was unfair to pass the burden on to the rest of the unit owners that are in good standing if one or two or three people refuse to pay. And that lien is the only tool that they have in order to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well,
on the other end, I think what you're referring to is the problems that we're having with the economy and the number of liens that we're now seeing. Let me tell you what we were able to do. For homeowner associations this year, we were able to get those banking or mortgage institutions that have the mortgages on the property to agree to give, if a lien process started and a foreclosure process started, they would be willing, whoever the mortgage holder was to give a year of maintenance fees to the board in order to not harm the rest of the unit owners. We did not get that provision for condos. That's a provision that's going to be negotiated during this summer to try to get the same provision for condominiums. So understanding the hardship, that's one of the issues in Tallahassee that is still very controversial, and our colleagues on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, felt that the issue of a lien is still a needed tool in order to keep a check and balance in an association.
Well, I'm going to just make one more comment so that you can move on, but that is, not contesting that, but what I'm saying is that particularly for senior citizens and elder individuals, it may be very difficult to pay quickly. They wanted to pay. In the particular case I'm referring to, they wanted to pay, but they couldn't do it within 4 months, and I feel that that is an undue burden and that the condo should have given them or worked out with the banks a much better time frame.
And Dr. Starr, we agree wholeheartedly with that. I think that here's where a lot of times common sense and sensitivity is lacking in a condo board. If you are a member of a board of directors and you are getting ready to either raise maintenance fees or levy a special assessments, what we've always told people is that we can't dictate or mandate common sense and sensitivity. What these boards should be doing is knowing that if the majority of the unit owners are going to have a hard time paying it, and a lot of times it's not that people are against it because they can physically see that the building may need the work done or they need to maintain it. I think it's the issue of the hardship of having to come up with such a large sum of money at any given time. This is where, again, common sense and sensitivity has to come in. I've had boards that have had those situations, and what they've done is they've gone ahead and had a meeting, asked every one of the unit owners to sit down, and they've worked it out in this very simple manner. How much could we afford to pay, knowing what the average income is for the people that live in this association? Could everybody here afford to pay such and such? And when they've agreed on a number, that's what they've gone ahead and voted on, and that's what they've instituted in the form of either a higher maintenance fee or a special assessment if that's what's needed. Unfortunately, we felt that that decision should be left to the boards, hoping that they will use some sensitivity and common sense and understand the physical condition, because here's the problem. If they don't use common sense and sensitivity, and let's say they put something on the backs of these unit owners that they can't pay it or they just refuse to pay it, then you've got the problem of having to put liens on these properties. The money's not coming in. The shortfall on their monthly budget that they need, and again, as I said earlier, if that happens, then only those who pay that have the money are going to have to pick up the responsibility for the rest of them. These kind of things we can't mandate. These kind of things we hope that people are using common sense, the members of these boards. If not, Dr. Starr, we may be back at it again next year or the following year, mandating something that I hate to say that we would even consider, because I keep saying we can't mandate common sense, but these are the things that we hope we don't have to find another way to try to mandate that they do work out some type of payment plans that will work for everyone.
Okay.
Continuing on, I'm almost done with this. This is picking proofs up, because I'm actually jumping through the pages because there's so many provisions. The slap suits. Protects owners against slap suits. For those that don't know what slap suits are, those are what we call strategic lawsuits against the public participation. Basically, is what I call speak out, and the law firm that represents the board tries to gag you by sending a letter out to you, and because you may have said something, you know, against the board, or you spoke about, or you criticized them. Well, that nonsense is going to stop. This is going to protect owners against these slap suits. And this, again, is simply just a form of litigation which is frequently filed by associations in order to intimidate and silence critics or opponents by burdening them or threatening to burden them with the cost of a legal defense so that they abandon the criticism and opposition. Can you believe that in this country that nonsense went on? That's no longer going to happen. You will have the right to speak your mind as long as you personally or physically don't attack somebody, you should be fine, and you should not be the recipient of one of these slap lawsuits anymore.
Okay.
A couple other things. Disclosure requirement of special interest. Here we go into the meat of some of the key issues. This is going to require that anybody that's on that board requires them to disclose any financial or ownership interest that they may have in providing maintenance or any type of management service to the associations. Common sense. Wasn't in law before. Option of contract cancellation. If a contract is found out to have some type of conflict with a board member, now we gave the unit owners the power to void a contract with the vote of the majority unit owners without penalty if there is someone who discovers that there was an interest or some type of conflict of interest among a board member and a contractor that's doing business with the association. Couple other quick things here. The division power of subpoena. Let me spend 2-3 minutes on this one. The biggest problem, I would say 80% of the problems that people have in condominium associations is no access to documents. They don't want to provide you with documentation. As you know, Dr. Starr, the situation is that in order to find out what's happening, you currently, by law, have the right to request anything that you want to see that is part of the association records, meaning you have access to their everything from their bids to the accounting records, to the reporting records, to estimates, to anything, any paperwork that you want. You have the right to request the paperwork, and you have to have it given to you within the 5 days. A lot of times, when people want to start acquiring information or they have some doubts about what's happening, they automatically start sending a letter to their board or to the property management company, to the law firm, requesting documents. Well, as you know, it's been almost impossible to get documents, especially if there's something shady going on. We've heard stories as we traveled around the state of Florida that people had been requesting certain documents for over a year, and nobody ever turned them over to them. Someone wanted to see the financials, and they couldn't get it.
In our case, 2 years.
There you go. There's a classic example. 2 years, you asking for what rightfully is yours to see, and they wouldn't turn it over. To me, that sends up a flag that something's not right there. But what was in place in the past was that if you complained to Tallahassee, well, all Tallahassee did was they'd send a letter to the board or to the property management company stating you have to turn over the documents that they've requested. And they quoted you Florida statute, but there was nothing there. There was no teeth. So people laughed at the state, laughed at the enforcement, and said, don't turn it over to them. You know what? Nothing's going to happen to us. Well, my law, that's going to change. What we did is we gave the division the power of subpoena. Here's why we think 70% up to 80% of the problems will be resolved by this provision in this legislation. This now mandates that the director of the division exercise the subpoena power granted to him after proof by certified return receipt mail for a single unit owner asking for a copy of official records. And upon receipt of such proof, the director shall issue the subpoena requiring the production of the requested documents. Let me put it to you in layman's terms. You're a unit owner. You're requesting any kind of paperwork, the documents that have to do with the last bid or what a contractor charges you, more importantly, the financials. I want to see the books. I want to see what you're doing with the money. And they don't turn it over to you. What we're asking people to do is from now on, when you request anything from the board or from the property management company, that you request it via certified return receipt mail, because that's your proof that you have asked for it, and somebody's going to sign for it. Once that comes back to you, and remember, they have 5 days, in some cases 10, to turn over the documents to you. If they haven't turned them over to you, now you can go ahead and file a complaint with the state of Florida. You will submit a copy of your return receipt, little mailer that comes back, a little green card as we call it, and with that, the state will now enact the subpoena power. They will call them first and say, you are going to give you a grace period of, let's say, 3 to 5 days. You need to turn over those documents ASAP. And if you don't, within the 5 days, Tallahassee will issue a subpoena to that board of directors or to that property management company to turn over the documents. And you know, now we've got some teeth, because a subpoena is nothing that they're not that to be laughed at. As you know, what will happen here is when you violate a subpoena, you possibly are looking at going to jail and a fine of up to $1,500 a day for those that won't turn over the documents. So we think that we finally did what we needed to do to give people transparency, to let them have access to documents, Dr. Starr. If we would have had that law in place when you put in, you said it took you 2 years to get these documents?
We never got them.
Not only did we not get them,
but the DBPR never wrote a letter. They did nothing.
They did nothing. That was part of the complaints, and they really had no power. So even if they did do something, it was a letter basically quoting Florida statute and telling you what they would do is they would threaten them with a fine and say, you have to turn it over. Well, that's history.
So my advice to you
in that situation would be to, again, request everything that you've requested for so many years, certified return receipt mail, get a copy of it, and see if they don't turn them over to you. And if you don't, you will file the complaint with Tallahassee. Tallahassee, then again, will give them the grace period, because we want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, but after the 3 to 5 day grace period, the subpoena will be issued. You will get your documents now, Dr. Starr.
And $500 a day if you don't.
It could be up to $1,500 a day.
$1,500
a day, and it can come with well, you will be arrested, so you will actually be charged with a criminal violation. You do not circumvent a subpoena.
By the way, I just wanted to interject that what our condo board president did is that she sent the envelope back to the post office.
Well,
and it languished there for an extra week. She did not accept it.
Well, the games will end,
okay.
And that kind of nonsense will stop. I've always said that there's a reason why people don't want to let you see what is going on. If somebody is denying you transparency, then that normally sets off some type of suspicion. Last couple of things, obligation to cooperate with investigations. Directors, officers, and employees, even the condominium developers, community association managers, community association management firms are now required to reasonably cooperate with the division in any investigation, and the division is going to refer this to the local law enforcement authorities to investigate these people. And the division believes, if the division believes that they have altered, destroyed, concealed, or removed any documents by this, they are going to be subject to a criminal and civil penalties. So those that play with documents will their day is coming. Another provision, for the first time, property management companies will now also be regulated. Remember, in the past, you really couldn't do anything even if you complained about a property management company, because normally you would complain and the complaint would fall upon the community association manager, the CAM, that was associated with the property management company. Now you will be able to actually file complaints against the property management company itself, and that will give the state an opportunity to look at these complaints and could lead up to the removal of a license to work in the state of Florida as that property management company is established. So that's going to be an interesting one, to put an end to what we call the little gypsy fly-by-night troublesome property management companies.
That's very powerful.
That's a powerful one. You'll see that a lot of these things, again, Dr. Starr, these were the problems that people were telling us that they had. They had the problem with getting access to documents. They had the problem with these CAMs. They had the problems with these property management companies. So for those listening, they're probably wondering, well, where were you guys? Why didn't you do this a long time ago? And I'll have an answer for that at the end of the show. It's called special interest, by the way.
All right.
Last but not least, what we're going to do, we're creating a community association living study council. So this is a council that's going to will meet every 5 years, and basically they will make recommendations in the future for laws relating to condo co-ops and homeowner associations. Last provision, and then we'll move on to HOAs. It's a non-developer disclosure. For all of those that complained about developers and they didn't turn over the product that they were supposed to, what we're doing with this now, this entitles a prospective purchaser to receive from the seller a copy of the governance form. The division shall provide a form summarizing the governance of condominium associations. The form should help prospective purchasers in understanding the association governance and clarifies intentions of the government, of the type of government form that the association has. And more importantly, disclosure from the developer explaining exactly what it is that he's doing, what type of association it is, and what is it that he's about ready to turn over to the first board of directors. Those are just some of the few provisions in this very large reform bill, House Bill 995.
Okay. Beautifully stated.
Tried to be as quick as I possibly could.
Well, we have about 10 minutes.
Well, I'm going to make the rest real quick. HOAs, those that are out there listening and want to know what happened with HOAs, I did not work on the HOA bill this year, but an HOA bill did pass the House, and just 2 days ago, the governor vetoed the Homeowner Association bill because of provisions that had to do with swimming pools. And I think a lot of people were very upset, feeling that that bill fell short of providing them some type of protection, regulation through the state of Florida. I'm very proud to say that with every action, there's a reaction. Well, the reaction is that I'm going to take up a homeowner association bill, and I'm going to try to do what we did with this huge condo reform bill. I'm going to try to do the same for homeowner associations in the next session. So if you're listening and if you'd like to go ahead and contact me, I'm going to look for input. Unfortunately, we won't have a committee traveling around the state of Florida again to take input, but please give me the input on what your problems are, but more importantly, suggestions if you live in a homeowner association environment so that we can do the same and prepare a bill for next session.
Tell them how they can reach you.
Phone numbers, area code 305. The number here is 442-6868, 305-442-6868. Email address, it's a state email, and I'm going to spell it out for you. It's my first name, which is Julio, spelled J-U-L-I-O, and then dot or period, Robina, spelled R-O, B as in boy, A apple, I-N-A. So we've got Julio.Robina, and it's at My Florida House, all one word, myfloridahouse.gov, G-O-V, short for government. So feel free to send me your suggestions, and we will definitely include them. And as we sit down, in Tallahassee to discuss this, we'll have your suggestions for homeowner associations for the 2009 session.
And I think we may have a caller on the line, so let's see. We have, as I said, very few minutes left, and I have some questions as well. So, caller, please make it short if you are on the line.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Representative Robina, thank you for championing condo owners' rights. I think it's been wonderful. I do have a very big problem and a question we've discussed before, and that is the termination of condominiums that the Florida Statute 718.117, which our developer intends to use to evict us and make us homeless. And I wondered if in the next legislative session, if there's anything that you can do to protect us.
Absolutely. And let me, first of all, start by apologizing, because if you came to one of our select committee meetings, we tried to take in as many cases as we could. And I think that that type of action is what we're looking for from DBPR and also from this committee that we're putting together. But, yes, the issues that have to deal with developers and what the abuse is that sometimes people receive from developers was something that our select committee agreed to work on and create a separate piece of legislation that deals just with the developer and the you know, the purchaser's rights, and of course even the issue of protection of the turnover, because nowadays we have a big market on what they call condo conversions, and people are getting a product that is at times inferior to a new product, and we want to make sure that we protect them. So, ma'am, to answer your question, absolutely. We apologize we didn't get a lot more provisions that had to deal with developers in the pipeline, but I guarantee you that myself, and there's a representative named Kevin Ambler, that will also be working on the issues that have to do with developers and what we can do to protect the unit owners of these associations.
Thank you very much, caller. And now another question from Joystar. I would like to ask you how you feel that the great progress you've made in Florida could be a guiding light across the nation, because I've discovered in my work that there are many states that fall so far behind. Some don't even have even primitive laws.
First of all, let me tell you that Florida is really becoming the leader. I mean, we've gotten calls from the Wall Street Journal. We've had calls from states like Arizona, California, New York, looking at what we're doing here in the state of Florida, and they're really starting to model some of the things that we're doing here. But Dr. Starr, I think what you have here is that this is a battle. What we did here in Florida, we've opened up Pandora's box. You understand that this was a very difficult situation. A lot of money, a lot of interest. You're talking about an industry that, if you look at all the people that are associated with it, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars every year. And that has been part of the problem, was trying to tackle the special interest. But as far as a model, what we're doing, I think that other states are definitely looking at us. I mean, if you specifically have any suggestions on how we can continue to emulate or even come up with better suggestions on our own, we're always open to it, but it's via communication with your elected officials.
My question is really, if there is no Julio Rabina or colleagues that, that have joined you in this quest over the years, what is the poor owner to do, whether it's a condo owner or an HOA member?
The best thing to do nowadays, since we created the Office of the Ombudsman, is that when you find yourself in a situation where you don't know where to turn, or you have a problem, or you have a question, call the Condominium Ombudsman office here in the state of Florida. They're in Tallahassee and they're in Broward. And they will cover calls from anywhere around the state of Florida. I think that we set this up as a resource for you to understand what your rights are, where you can turn, because one of the things we didn't discuss was the fraud program that started as a pilot program here in Miami-Dade County, where we're educating police officers in the Economic Crimes Unit, and we're even at times educating some of the state attorneys on how to prosecute possible fraud. I mean, we're up to 8 arrests and 8 convictions in fraud cases in Dade and Broward.
I know this quite well because I tried to be one of your first cases and failed miserably, I must say.
That's correct, and we understand the issue was of the due diligence evidence and lack of training. But Dr. Starr, I'll tell you that knowing what these changes are, I think that you have a great case and a great opportunity to reopen this. Oh, and by the way, if I failed to mention, now the statute of limitation has been changed to 7 years.
Really?
Yeah, so you still have an opportunity to address those issues under these new changes.
That's wonderful. And you've had 8 arrests so far.
We've had 8 arrests. The top one was $1.4 million by a group of board members and property management company in Broward County. We've had some association presidents using money for their own personal use. People using money to pay their credit card bills and their gas bills. I mean, I don't want to speak in general terms, because I will tell you that the majority, I want to be very clear, of these boards and their volunteers, God love them, God bless them, they're good people. But every so often, a group of them goes astray, and we needed to have something in place. So going back to the Julio Rubinas of the world, I just found out that, 5-6 years ago, that there was a need to take this on, because the laws weren't there to protect the unit owners. They were there to protect board members that at time, as I just stated, may have gone astray. I'm going to continue at it. The good thing about it is that if you're listening, you should be communicating with your local legislator, with your local state rep, with your senator that represents you here in our capital in Tallahassee. And if you live in a homeowner association or condo, ask them to get more involved in this. This is about people's roofs. This is the roof over your head and living in peace. And it's important that everybody get involved. And if you can, there's a lot of civic organizations. One that I like to comment about all the time, which is Citizens Cyber Justice, which is John Bergman. There's groups like that out there that the average person can call, and they can help you out and guide you. So there's now some resources for you. We just don't want you to sit there and be frustrated. You need to know that There are several groups working, but more importantly, we as legislators are trying to change the laws to stop the abuse.
Oh, this is wonderful. And what we're doing as well is we're providing counseling one-on-one. Oftentimes, the owner really needs to have some hand-holding that goes beyond what they might be able to get elsewhere, and we're doing that as well. So we're right there in your court.
I thank you very much because I know you're very knowledgeable, and I know that you've written about this and you know how to help people. And, you know, the last thing I want to say is that we're all in this together. I mean, I know apathy is a very common word these days, but you can't be apathetic when you have people like us working, Dr. Starr, and we are committed to doing this. I mean, I've committed to this from the first time I stepped foot in the Florida House, and I'm still committed to it because there's so much more to do, so many other problems that need to be addressed. But I will then state again that you that are listening out there, you need to let me know what these problems are and let me know what it is that I can do to solve them. I don't live in an association environment, so I'm legislating for you. If you have a problem and you have, more importantly, a solution, please communicate with me via phone, via email, but let me know what it is, because that's basically lawmaking. We're going to listen to it. We're going to discuss what your suggestion is. It may end up being law next year at this time. It's as simple as that, but you've got to get involved, and you can't take it sitting down anymore. You've got to get up and defend your rights to live in an association environment.
My hat off to you. I'm waving a flag here because
thank you very much. I appreciate
it. It's a sense of, really, it's a sense of you're lifting people's hopes, and it's a feeling of honor and duty and responsibility on the part of our legislators, and this is just absolutely wonderful and refreshing, certainly at a time like this. We're all going through such fear and concern for the future. And I often say that I see your path going straight to the Senate, and who knows where from
well,
there.
Well,
I know that you love Florida, but
I appreciate
anyway.
It. I appreciate it, and only the Lord will know where I end up. I mean, if you'd asked me that I was going to be doing this 10 years ago, I would have probably said no way. But that's what community activism is all about. I'm a community activist. It started locally. And like I said, God put me here. Don't ask me how I got here, but I'm now a legislator for the state of Florida. I think I do it for the right reason. All the laws that I do are about consumer protection. So, you know, a lot of times, a lot of elected officials get a very bad rap, as you know, Dr. Starr, but there are good ones, and I have a lot of good ones that work with me that are concerned with these issues and other very pertinent issues to the state of Florida.
Well, I thank you for being with us today. It's been a pure pleasure. I hope you're going to come back and fill us in again in the future.
I look forward to it.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a great evening.
You too. Take care then. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr with Rights Radio.